Well, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, guess who's back? Green Giants podcast number 220. What a beautiful number. I can't wait for 222, to be honest. I don't know. Something about numbers. My name is Farhad, and I'm already off topic. I'm the host that loves you most, and we're back after what seemed to be a never-ending summer. Back when you're a kid, never-ending summer is good. When you're an adult with two kids, it's well, yeah, it was fun. We're happy to be back. We're not officially in the season number 10 yet. We wanted to do a preseason preview of sorts. Before we get into that, I would like to introduce my friends and co-hosts, Kevin Mack, straight from Turin. We got Lucas. I don't know where he is now. This man moved about 16 times ever since we met him a year ago. So I don't know where he's hiding now. But he does have a brand new appearance. I don't know if he's running from the law or something. By the way, speaking of appearances, you can watch this on YouTube. Zaki Stugats, our friend and educator. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. The whole crew is back. Well, I got a backlog of people who will be joining us in this upcoming season number 10. But we're nothing without you guys. Thank you so much for coming back. I know you guys have so much entertainment to dedicate your time to. And we appreciate you guys spending an hour and change with us. Speaking of an hour and change, I know Dave and Dash, they do a little background check for me. They do they know what the listeners like. And people do not like episodes that are shorter than 1 hour. And I feel like that's a new era of podcasting. Thank you, Joe Rogan, for making the long, what do they call long?
The longer long form
podcast. Yeah. So I guess we will be going a little over an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 20, whatever it takes. So we will be recording longer episodes. There's just so much to get through. Throughout the episode, I will be peppering you guys with the new stuff, the plans. We're always trying to grow. The transfer saga, we will go through everything possible in this episode. The boys are here to help me. Ways to listen to us if you're a brand new listener: Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever app you use for your Android phone. And of course, YouTube. I will be making a lot more appearances here on YouTube just because I cleaned up my schedule. Last year was so chaotic, and I want to dedicate a minute and say thank you to Dash and Dave and everyone who participated and made our YouTube page what it is now, because we started with 30 followers. And now we're over 1,000. So I appreciate you guys. Without further ado, Alessandro Belpiero is here as always. He is the decider. If you hear this noise, it's game over. Here he is, in case you guys haven't never seen Alessandro Belpiero. And I'm pointing at the computer camera because I have now a brand new webcam, which will be upgraded as well. Yeah, right. Stepping our game up a little bit. Lucas, you wanted to bring up a topic which will get us into this brand new episode number 220. What did you want to bring up, buddy?
Yeah, so I just wanted to spend a few minutes talking about kind of recapping the summer and kind of this idea of, are we in a win now mode opposed to a rebuild or in like a compete mode? Because I just think that the moves that we have made with our management and with the players going in and out is really kind of signified like we are ready to compete, if not win the Scudetto this season. When we look at players kind of coming in and out, I'm just kind of curious what you guys are thinking, along with I have Uncle Beppe's list he posted yesterday, which will be a little helpful, of like the whole list of, you know, players coming in, players coming out. But I just want to get your feedback and kind of start this discussion of, we are under the impression that we would be in more of a rebuild with our new sporting director, but it really seems like we haven't really done much rebuilding. It's just we've kept the pieces and we've added a few, and we're still kind of keeping this train on the rail and this project going forward. So I just kind of want to pick at your brains and kind of see where you guys feel.
this ain't no rebuild, let me tell you. This is just scraps we can work with. And the uncertainty around Vlahovic didn't help. It was a mess. It was a mess of a transfer market. And I think later on we can do the grades for the transfer market. Like I mentioned, Kevin is the one in the thick of things. He's in Turin. He is the guy who brings us the videos from Turin, and it's always a treat. By the way, follow us at Turin Giants on every possible social media, including Threads. Right, since the last time we talked, there was Threads, there was a submarine, and now Twitter is called X. This is pretty much three things that happened during the summer. But going back to the topic, Kevin, what do you hear? What do you say? You're there right now.
I think it's one of those situations where we can be like talking out of both sides of our mouth, where we're Juventus, right? The notion of rebuilding is never really part of the vocabulary. And I remember, I think it was back during the Euros, like going back a year or two, Del Piero was one of the hosts and the pundits for ESPN, and somehow Juventus got brought up around just the period that they're going through. And he very clearly said, it's Juventus. The expectation is you always have to win. There is no rebuilding seasons for Juve. Now, when we look at the reality of our financial situation and where we find ourselves, we don't have the ability to invest, right? We're not Chelsea buying 80, 90 million pound or euro players every other day. Like, we just don't have that ability.
Well, what's up with that? When did this start becoming a norm? It's just ridiculous.
It's insane.
You guys see the numbers on people, and it's people. Listen, I have to admit, as you get older, as you know, life gets busier, you do tend to kind of start following like your team and you know, Serie A is the priority, of course, but they're signing players we've never heard of. And we were kind of on the fringes of the football community. You know, we're like little dot in the football universe, but we know players. And then these players who go for 100 mil every year. And it's, you brought up Chelsea. What's up with that?
Chelsea has spent more, I think, over the last two seasons than Serie A has in total. I mean, it's just crazy.
That's not a hyperbole.
And
yeah.
I saw some meme recently. The guy who they brought in from Ukraine last year, Mudryk, am I saying that right? The joke is he's had more numbers at Chelsea because he went from 15 to 10 this year. Then he scored goals. I mean, he's had no impact on the team, and they dropped 100 million pounds on him last January transfer window.
Hold on. I thought you said they dropped $100 million on Mudryk.
They did last January, winter transfer season. Insane.
I mean, I guess in Serie A, we just have to embrace it. And I know it's desperation and it's necessary, but I think we need to embrace the fact that we need to find younger players and find these hidden gems and do a lot of moving around. Am I wrong when I say that? It's just an era where we have to do a lot of.
And that's why Gentoli's here, right? Like, that's supposed to be his specialty, but he's got to get a foundation in place, and we're definitely going to see more players going out than coming in. We may see some surprises over the course of these next couple of weeks, but I think by and large, we're looking at the squad we're going to have. And the question is it good enough? And I know we'll probably talk more about the preseason, the summer tour, and some of the friendlies we've had, which I think were pretty encouraging. But I think there's a lot to be excited about. Mm-hmm. But Lucas, coming back to, are we in win now mode or build now? It could be a combination of both, where this team could be good enough if we're firing on all cylinders and without the European distraction and players getting a chance to rest. people coming back from injury. The squad gels a little bit better. We're just more sharp, but this is no means a finished product. And with the benefit of what Gentoli brings over the seasons to come, we could just be building towards something really special. But I think it's both, if that's a cop-out answer. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Are we getting 2011, 2012 vibes?
It's a bit early, but that would be exciting if that's the case.
Just the vibes, like little vibes. What do you guys think? Lucas, were you even old enough to watch the 2011-12 season?
Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh. Yes, that was one of my favorite seasons because Conte is my favorite coach.
Absolutely.
But yes, I was old enough.
I still remember watching the first game, Juve Parma, in bed. Just that feeling of hope. And I don't think we'll ever experience a happiness like this, because we went into the season, new coach, new team, let's go. And we ended up winning or drawing every game, an unbeaten season. I think our expectations are high for this season. What do you guys think? Zachy, you haven't said anything yet. What's up, buddy?
I'm with Kevin on this one, in the sense that we I think are kind of in a sense rebuilding. You know, we've shed a lot of the deadwood that we have been talking about having to do over the past several seasons and just haven't done it. And we got Gentoli in here, and Gentoli has already started to pick his priorities and do things right. For the most part, you know, barring one exception, but I won't hold it against him.
Say it. It's a podcast.
Well, I mean, I didn't love Ravella leaving, but
nobody did.
I understand the injury concerns, record thing, okay, but I think the kid's special. So, you know, that one kind of stinks, but like, I know if we're, like we said, we're in a financial position in which we have to kind of make some hard decisions. If that was one of them, okay, you know, it is what it is. Stinks. And he's going to like a team I absolutely despise, which stinks. So I'm like, mm-hmm. But so I will swallow my pride a little bit and still root for the kid, but I will not ever root for that team ever. Anyways, yeah. But I do really like where we're going, in the sense that I think that the pieces that we've put together in the midfield, albeit young, have a lot of upside and have a lot of potential. I think we made some really smart signings that would, I think, give us an opportunity, depending on how we're playing. We're firing on all cylinders. We're lucky enough, you know, I don't know what the hell J Medical is going to be like this year, since we never know what's going on with those bastards the last three seasons. And if we can stay healthy, I think we can win now. I do think so, but
You bring up an excellent point, man. Sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're right.
Injuries were just awful last couple of seasons. If we're able to curb that problem a little bit, there's half a problem right there. Lucas, what'd you think of? I'll get back to you, Zachy. Lucas, what'd you think of the Ravella? Ravella is a sore spot. It's that transfer. I saw non-Juve accounts tweeting that, or Xing. Is that what you were saying now? Did you X my ex? So yeah, I mean, outside of Juve accounts, we're just like flabbergasted. Like, really? This kid is good. What are you doing? And plus, what was the terms of the contract too? Wasn't that a complete disaster as well?
Well, they were saying it was about 17, 18 million euros, which that's my biggest gripe with the situation is I'm okay with him leaving. We have a lot of midfield talent with Fagioli, Moretti, Berengia as well. Like, we have some guys in there and we have youth, and we could also bring in a few finished products and don't forget Pogba as well. So the idea of him leaving really doesn't bother me. He hasn't really integrated into the squad at all, so he would essentially be a new player. So him kind of coming and going isn't that big of a deal for me. It's just more so where the amount we sold him for.
Yeah.
Because a player like him leaving is the type of player, and the players we'll see as well pretty soon, leaving, that allows us to keep Vlahovic and Chiesa and some of those guys. So the same people that really wanted those two to stay are also kind of the ones that are complaining about the Rovellas leaving and possibly a few more out the door. And that's the sacrifice we need to make, is do we let one or two players go that can get us high value transfers and recoup that money we're trying to recoup? Or do we let a few promising guys like maybe Illin or Zule or, like I said, a Rovella go for 20 million each, and then that's how you recoup it? So it's just really where you prioritize. And luckily, we do have a strong midfield at the moment, contrary to the last few years. So if that's where we're going to be making the sacrifices, I'm all for it. I think he's special. I think he's great. But I also think we have very promising young players in that area, and holes in other areas of our team that needs to be prioritized going forward.
Let's go around the room and see what you guys think about Vlahovic, and if you'd like them to stay, go. What are your thoughts? Let's do some Vlahovic thoughts. Kevin, you want to go first?
I mean, he's been underwhelming ever since he arrived. And so still waiting to see what we saw from him at Fiorentina. The problem is our setup and what we expect from a center forward isn't the same style that he had with Italiano and the way that Fiorentina attacks the goal. And so whether he can adapt his style of play with his positioning a little bit more with his back to goal, I think he's going to continue to struggle. Now, would I have wanted Lukaku to come in to replace him? Hell no. The only way that that would have made sense to me is if we were able to sell Vlahovic for the 80, 90 million that we supposedly were looking for. And Lukaku comes in on one of those year loan with some kind of nominal fee, or he's valued at something like 15, 20 million, and you've made a 60 million profit on Vlahovic, assuming that the finances would have been the primary reason behind it. But like on the personal note, and Vlahovic as a player and a human being on the squad, he wants to be here. I think he's very passionate about being a Juventino, and we want players like that. And I'm happy it looks like he's going to stay.
I agree.
I just hope he can get close to at least a 20 goal season for him to really kind of validate that support and attachment that a lot of the fans are showing towards him.
Man, a lot of people are unhappy about his first touch. It's the first, if you know, people in general do love him and his love, and man is a beast, but man, people do not like his first touch. Lucas, what do you think? Are you the right thinking American, or are you a traitor like Dash, who wants Vlahovic out at all costs?
Yeah, I've definitely flipped a little bit, just thinking about the team more instead of the player. I wanted him out like a month and a half ago. It's too late now. The season's about to start. He's at a whole preseason.
I don't know if it's too late, man. We've seen deals go down 24 hours before. I am still holding my breath.
That's true. But I think he will end up staying, and I think we've moved some pieces out, and we're looking to move out another piece or two to kind of recoup that money. But I'm all for him staying now. I think we got the right pieces to help him out in his game too, bringing in Weah and a few others we'll get to. But he's shown a lot of passion and fight and kickback to him being moved out. And like Kevin said, we need more players like that that want to be at the club when you have Saudi money coming in and the Premier League attraction. So if you want to stay at our club and you're a top talent, I think we need to hold on to these players now going forward.
Again, I'm going to sway off topic here. And if you're new to this podcast, this is literally ADD ridden podcast. It's because I interrupt people, but please don't think I do this intentionally. It's just sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Got to be a bad person. But let's talk about Neymar. Has there ever been a career wasted in the last 20 years more than that? And I'm not a fan of the guy. This is purely for just the conversation's sake. What's happening? Look, you guys,
Neymar.
Anybody has Neymar thoughts?
Neymar is on his day when he wants to play and he's healthy, is borderline unplayable. The dude is an exceptional talent, but exceptional talent only gets you so far. Like, obviously, it didn't work out for him at PSG, I think, like they were hoping, obviously, because they kept getting bounced out of the Champions League super early, barring one.
Because he was injured time. In the most important games.
And he was always injured. He was always injured, except for the 1 year where he was not injured. And they did get to a Champions League final. It was the COVID year, and they lost to Bayern. So, I mean, look, the guy, I don't love him. I don't love his. He's so what's the word? He's got like this air of extravagance to him that he kind of chases. And I feel like it's almost kind of like reminiscent of what Cristiano Ronaldo became, except for that he never ever stayed healthy enough. And he always didn't have the focus. I mean, Cristiano was like a machine. Yeah. He has the 600 million followers or whatever, but Cristiano wants to play football and win. Like, that's what he wants. Neymar seems like he's distracted and he's got other things going on. And I don't know what the man's life was like in Brazil growing up or whatever like that. But, you know.
His dad seems to be a stand-up guy. Looks like a complete. Questionable individual. There was a Netflix show on Neymar. If you guys can seek it out, just. The man never grew up. I'm shocked he's 31.
Did you hear the
craziest part?
The deal that he has with his partner, his pregnant partner. He's allowed to sleep with other women as long as he doesn't kiss them. Like this.
What the hell?
Yes.
What? Yeah.
Read that.
Not bad.
Like, if you talk about questionable characters and people,
I mean, it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Grown up, I mean, there you go.
I just think the man is too distracted.
Yeah, well, you know what? He's going to make a shite load of money that we're not.
The dude will never have to. He and his kids will never ever have to do anything with themselves because of how. I mean, yeah, the wealth that he's going to acquire just from this one deal. I mean, as if he wasn't already on like egregious wages as it is. Now it's like unbelievable. The fact that he's going to have a 25 bedroom mansion that was stipulated in his contract, 4 different vehicles, fully staffed, a house of maids. Like, he's living like a prince, essentially.
You guys think, I saw
that's what he wanted.
Yeah, but Ronaldo was, there's no way whatever Ronaldo is making is what we see. Ronaldo is getting so much kickback. I don't know why I thought about Ronaldo. I'm going into my Sam Adama mode where everything is a conspiracy theory, but there's no way he didn't work out a deal with the management. There's something going on that Ronaldo is going to be richer than we can ever imagine.
Well, did you guys see that video of Fabinho like 2 days ago where a fan gave him a Rolex?
Rolex.
And I've talked to a few ex-pros in my career, and one of them was ex-Brazilian pro, and he used to tell me funny stories that, you know, fathers would try to pass off their wives as gifts, or he would get, you know, 10 goats or pigs as gifts after games if he scored, or gifted a car, little things like that. And you can't imagine like the gifts that the princes are given Ronaldo just for having a good performance. Like, here's an extra Bugatti, or here's an extra trust fund. Here is this for your kid. Like, just, you know, one story is about pigs and goats, but this is prince money now. And
this is money that's unaccounted for. This is money that if you literally watch a video about top 10 richest people, top 5, they're like, oh, there's no way to compute their money. So anyways, going back to topic, Lucas, you wanted to bring up Lukaku. We kind of went into the transition of Saudi Arabia. There was talk about Lukaku going to play there. Still don't know. Tottenham I feel like I saw a couple of edits. That's how I get my news. If I see a player photoshopped into a jersey of a team, I assume they're associated with it, because who has time to read all of that? But of course, I'm just kidding. Lukaku at Juve. If it were to happen, where do you see him? Because Lucas is my guy when it comes to formations and all that. Give us a couple of minutes of where would Lukaku fit in our system?
He would have to start. I mean, you would have to really compete hard to get a player like him with the money circulating around. Like, you're going to have to bid to get him. So if you put money into getting him, he's going to need to start. He would need to pair up with Vlahovic up top and be the guy that puts his back up against defenders and kind of lays it off for a deep.
But isn't Vlahovic gone if we get Lukaku?
If that's what happens, right? But if we're talking about just getting Lukaku and DB9 stays, it would be in a situation like that. But I could see them pairing up well together. It just means that we would have to configure the entire rest of the team to kind of play for them in a back three with kind of, you know, five mids that just kind of do their work and put them in positions. I don't see it happening. It would probably be a situation, like you said, where one of them would have to go, because I don't think you could play soccer anymore where your entire team is feeding one player. Everyone needs to do something.
I'm down to play with Vlahovic and Lukaku up top. Two beasts. It's just Lukaku is not attractive to Juve fans, because that would mean somebody would leave. And Kevin, speaking of Turin and Kevin and Lukaku, you went to the preseason game at the stadium, correct? Can you give us the
I tried to. I tried to Lukaku? Get there, but I had a friend who went. I waited too long to request the ticket, and they went out pretty fast. But the atmosphere was cool. Like, I saw a lot of videos, a lot of pictures. I think we put a few on our social media accounts. But before the players walked out to the pitch, and I think it was when Gentoli and some folks from the management came out, the whole fan group, and mind you, this was mostly just like your average everyday people, right? Like, fathers with their sons coming to the game. It wasn't really dominated by like ultras and fan groups. Like, everybody in unison was just singing, "No Lukaku, no lo vogliamo," like, "No, Lukaku, we don't want you." And then when the match wrapped up, everybody invaded the pitch. So the traditional preseason match that the name escapes me right now, guys, remind me where we normally play with the family environment. Drawn a blank. But like, we've been playing that match for decades. And this is the first time they did the Juve A and Juve B in the Allianz Stadium. But a tradition from that match is all the supporters invade the pitch before the game ends, and it just becomes a fun way to interact with the players. So something similar happened at the end of this. So after they got to interact with the players, take pictures of themselves on the pitch, they all just kind of surrounded the management and singing, "No Lukaku, non lo vogliamo." And that was pretty loud and clear what the fans think.
That's crazy. I wonder if the management took that in account. Like, social media is one thing, where Allegri out photos were all plastered all over. That clearly didn't help. But I wonder if they listened to that and kind of took a step back. I don't know about managements nowadays, how much they listen to fans, especially, you know, top 10 teams, the biggest teams in the world, which Juve happens to be. I wonder if they listened, and I wonder if they maybe they listened to this podcast. So let's just say no Lukaku. I think that handles it. Right?
Look, they have to be aware of what's going on, right? Because it was like literally this was on the front page of all three major Italian sports papers like the next day, and it was. On the papers before and after, wow. Right? Like, not even related to the match. Just, it was very clear that the fan base was not interested in this move. But what we don't know is how pressing the actual financial situation is, right? And I know we talk about the crazy money that Lukaku would be making, but with the growth decrees and with the amortization behind all of this, like, this could have been a very pressing financial need and not necessarily one driven by sporting outcome. And this was the best way to get about it because Vlahovic and Chiesa are our two most marketable assets. I think there's a real desire to keep the best Italian talent on Juve. So Vlahovic was the most enticing market option, and there weren't many clubs who could afford him. I mean, you can count on less than five fingers, but not all of them were in the market for Vlahovic. And the Chelsea situation with Lukaku was a way to get around it. Again, if this was purely financially driven, which us as fans and like the Twitter or kind of X warriors, whatever you want to call them, they're not exposed to that.
Are we doing this? Are we calling Twitter X on this podcast now? Is that the new X, new us? Which is atrocious. I'm sorry. Calling Twitter X is just so fucking stupid. But anyways, that's besides the point.
Twitter is Twitter.
Twitter is Twitter. I tweeted something. I tweeted at someone. I retweeted it. It is just, if you're changing a name and you come up with X. But anyways, I'm sorry. I went off again. We didn't talk about Chiesa a lot because if you had to choose, Kevin, you for example.
Absolutely.
Chiesa stays, right? Out of those two, yeah. It was it's so funny how people rate Chiesa higher than Vlahovic. Why is that? Can you guys explain to me?
I think it's the dynamism of the way that he plays, right? Like Farhad, you mentioned it in a WhatsApp message earlier, this transfer market. Like he's the X factor, right? Like he's the guy who can turn a game just like on a moment's notice. Vlahovic, if he improves his finishing and for all the things that we talked about, I don't think he's the guy that puts the team on his back to win a game. And Chiesa has that ability. And Juve's always had one of the stars of the Italian national team. And I think that's an important thing and to hold on to your Italian talent.
I went back to watch Euro 2020 highlights from Chiesa. Man won a Euro and helped the team so much, and the goals were so good. What I love about Chiesa, and I want to jump to Lucas next to find out what he thinks about Chiesa and upcoming season. What I love about Chiesa is his inability to give up on the ball. If you look at his goals, a lot of those goals were because he just didn't give up after he lost the ball. That's what I love. That's the Juve way. We saw Ronaldo. You know, he did score like over 100 goals for Juve. And if you go back, a lot of those goals were because he refused to give up. So that's Chiesa for me, a man who can make something out of nothing. So, of course, if I had to choose between the two, we would go with Chiesa, the X factor. Lucas, what do you think about Chiesa going into this season?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see him in his kind of new role, playing as kind of like that 10. He'll be playing as a 10. They're saying he's going to be a second striker. I mean, unless things change, we bring more wingers and he could then slot in, but it's looking like he's going to play that 10 and kind of help create a box midfield by dropping back in to help, you know, transition up into the final third. And I think when he comes and drops back, he's actually going to have outside mids that are going to be higher up the field. He could then look to play those balls to like a Weah, who's looking to help start that counterattack, opposed to Cuadrado, who's staying farther back and then also always passing backwards. We actually have wingers going up. And then with Chiesa's immense speed that he still has, he can then burst forward and get to the edge of the box or get into the box and look to finish. So I'm definitely excited to see him in this new role. That's also going to help, just like I said, with the transitional stuff, because we have such a hard time getting the ball from the middle of the field into that final third. So having somebody there, almost like a Dybala, but way different in the terms of he's got that dynamism to him. I think it's going to add more bite to our counterattacks that we just did not have last season, yeah. Because we did so much of just back pass and facilitate and finding that perfect way to get down the field that when you're slow, it doesn't exist. So having him out there is going to add a lot to our team and just make different parts of our field a little more dangerous because anything.
So I want to, hear your thoughts on, on the 3-5-2. But before I do, I want to announce a couple of new stickers on TurinGiants.com. I redid the website. Please go check out TurinGiants.com. There will be updates on products. We have a pretty good line going. So here they are. If you're watching on YouTube, this thing is so awesome. I just printed these yesterday. No Pirlo, no party stickers. Of course, there's a shirt. There she is. It's been selling pretty well. This is on the background. I'm doing a little marketing now because we got bills to pay, baby. These mics ain't free. And here's another one. We had a retirement during the summer, and we're gonna talk about Gigi as well. We're gonna dedicate a few minutes to Gianluigi Buffon officially retiring, but who knows, right? He's done that before. It's still kind of weird seeing him in the PSG colors when I was watching the highlights. Like, Gigi and PSG. PSG-Gigi just doesn't really work. And it was a shame he didn't win the Champions League that year. Going back to Juve and the formation, we are pretty much 3-5-2 club now. Lucas, give me and the listeners a little background on what we look forward to. What we can look forward to as far as the formation switch.
Yeah, I think the main difference going into this season opposed to last is last season it was just these are the parts we have and we need to kind of transition into this naturally. And the way our kind of three in our midfield wing backs kind of rolled was it reminded me of like a pendulum or like those metal balls that clack. It really seemed like when one of
like
our,
this mic.
What'd you say?
Like my mic.
Yeah. It really seemed like at times we actually looked like a back four at times, and it looked like one went up, one stayed back, and very slow. In that transition going forward, where now it really looks like all right, we're getting pieces to help that back line and then also those mids. Getting someone like Weah really changes the game, like I said, because of that speed. He's going to be higher up the field. Our wingbacks were way too far back last season to really have – oh, look at that shirt. Oh, that's nice. Beautiful.
Yeah, Kev.
Even Ilham Jr. getting more minutes and hopefully Kostic just being higher up the field. It's you can look at a team like Inter or Conte's teams in the past. Those – you know, Lick Steiner was getting up there. He was going bombing up and down the field. Asamoah was bombing down the field. Like, Cuadrado was going nowhere. Like I said, he would go to half fields and he would look to send across or he would pass it backwards. And it really put a lot of pressure on Kostic last season, which they just double covered him and he's a one trick pony. Now there's threat on both sides and we could really start pushing those players up. And hopefully we'll
Kostic, they're. Sorry, buddy. Sorry to interrupt. That's another disadvantage of doing these over the internet because you interrupt and then there's a little pause. Oh, by the way, speaking of in person, you know, Giovanni, our buddy, he'll be back on this podcast. Hopefully we'll be able to record in person. Everyone knows how much I love Gio and his expertise and people have missed him. He's been busy, but he promised to make a lot more appearances. Lucas, going back to you, explain to me. And before I get into it, this is like a transition podcast where I need to remind the older listeners of what we're all about and the new ones, welcome again. I never claim to be an expert. Guys, I just run the podcast. I love it. I have passion for it. I love getting Juventini together to talk about Juve. I was making a lot of mistakes throughout the season, and forgive me, and I admit it, I'm like the weakest link on this podcast. All I do is get the dudes together, and they are the smart ones. So explain to me why people think that Bremer is not strong enough to be in a three-man back line. Because apparently that's a thing. I talked to Dash about it. He explained it kind of, but I wanted to be on record. How different is it for a defender to be in a three-man back line as opposed to four-man back line?
Yeah, I think
it's a tough one. I'm sorry.
I think he's slow, and I think when you have a back four, right, those outside backs, they get up the field, which then limits you down to two. And you had that same problem kind of with Bonucci, right? He's slow and he's not the most physical. But Bremer is physical, but he is very slow. So you need to have two guys on his left and right that are a little bit closer, more compact in. Or if they do go wider, you have someone Locatelli kind of close by, which he was doing a decent amount last season as well. But I think it really just comes down to, I don't think he has the smartest soccer IQ. He's more of like a brute physical guy, kind of like a Chiellini in that sense. But Chiellini had that immense IQ as well. But yeah, I definitely agree with Dash and others that he needs to kind of at the moment stay in this kind of center back with Danilo or Alexandro, more faster guys on his right or left.
Did you just say Alexandro's
it's
fast?
It's not just him. He's faster than maybe a Gatti or a Bonucci or a Rugani.
Fast, I mean, fast to get tired.
We gotta work with what we have. You know, he was an outside back, so there is some speed there.
By the way, this is a reminder. It's 2023, and Alexandro is still earning money for Juventus. Just we will be reminding you that every podcast.
But at the moment, I don't think Bremer belongs in a back four until we bring somebody else in there. Maybe Gatti is the guy. I don't know. But I think we need somebody that just helps make that happen. He's just and there's nothing wrong with being in a back three. There's nothing wrong with what he gives. You just have to work with your team strengths. And that's what we're doing going into this preseason.
So, Lucas, here's a question for you then on the tactical side. So if we bring Berardi in, and I just saw something pop up that he's training separately from the Sassuolo team right now. So he wants this to happen.
Yes.
If he comes in, I think clearly we're looking at three in the front, right? There's Berardi, Chiesa, and Vlahovic. I don't think we're benching Chiesa or anything for Berardi. And so to have three up front, we either need to do a 4-3-3 or a 3-4-3. I don't think Allegri wants to go with two center midfielders in a 3-4-3 with just like Rabiot and Locatelli. What do you do? What formation are you doing if those three are up front?
Yeah, so I would look to do a 4-2 and then a 3-1. Having someone like a Pogba in that cam role, and you could have a Chiesa on the left, a Berardi on the right, and then a Vlahovic up top. I think the issue with that, though, comes depth and who you have behind. When you have, we're looking at three to four strikers right now with Yildiz and Jorge, Milik, Keen. There's so many players in those striker roles that you really want to have that front too for that reason. But you could definitely have Berardi in that team. Players will need to go to make it happen. Whether it's a Keane, it's a Milik, one of those guys will need to be transitioned out. You could also go with a 4-4-2 diamond, as there are rumors that Kostic is on his way out and an Illing Jr. is slid more into an 8 and less of an outside mid. So you could do something like that as well, but that puts a lot of emphasis on our outside backs. And do we trust Wea, Cambiaso, Alexandro, if he's pushed back out wide, do we trust those guys to get up and also be able to defend? So I would say the 4-2-3-1 would be the move if you go with a Berardi, and hopefully he would play almost like an Insigne role where you saw in Simeon Napoli 2 years mm-hmm. ago, where he was a little more defensive. He was coming back. He was helping as well. And you let Chiesa cook. You let Pogba kind of rotate where you want him to be, and you let Vlahovic stay up. So we'll see. Berardi's a name I see. Yep. DiMarzio saying there's some tension, right, between Sassuolo and the team, and we'll see what
happens. They already found a replacement.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Looking at Orsolini.
I didn't see that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it just came up on my I've been sitting here like going back and forth on my Twitter feed, and that's what I'm seeing is Orsolini.
Yeah, I just saw as well.
I'd rather have Orsolini.
I would say which is ironically the fact that I would much rather have Orsolini than Berardi, but that's just me.
I would as well. Yeah.
I think he's a real talent.
All right, let's switch up the topic a couple of minutes. Let's talk about if we have any Cuadrado thoughts. The man retired, you know, he did earn his, what was it, 400 appearances for Juve? It was
300, I think. 300.
Was that it? 300 or 400?
Yep.
Yeah. 300.
Which is, of course, a pretty good landmark, but then he goes and joins Inter. I don't have, it makes me feel bad when I read the comments from Juve fans, and it doesn't make me feel good that we're associated with those people. The man needs to make a living. I will not be supporting him by any stretch, but also writing disgusting things to a human being is kind of like...
Oh, well, sure. Yeah.
But as far as being a fan, what do you guys think about that move itself? A couple of minutes.
It hurts. It hurts a little bit.
It
hurts. You know,
really? Does it hurt?
In the sense that, like, you know, like he was a part of some very formative Juventus squads, at least in my life, like, you know, like I thought the guy was cooked.
Yeah,
two seasons ago. Easy. I would say three. Yeah. Because look, the dude is really good when it comes to his explosiveness and his speed and his ability to shake defenders off and make a move. But then his legs just gave it. You know, it happens. Some human beings, their legs will last them a little bit longer. His, you know, he put a lot of miles on those legs. So he just started not being able to perform like he used to. And we should have moved on from him three seasons ago, but we didn't. And look, I have some really wonderful memories with Juan in the squad. And I have no ill will towards him as a human being. Yeah, it hurts he goes to Inter because, like, they're a literal garbage fire, but like you know, he's comfortable in Italy. I'm sure the move, I'm sure, was very easy going from Turin to Milan. You know, if he wants to stay in Italy and just hang out for a little while and to me it hurts
less because Inter getting I don't want to call him crab, but
no, he's washed.
Our rival is getting a washed player. So
that's why I'm not upset. Like, I'm upset in the sense of just like he was a Juve guy for so long, right? And I cheered for him very hard.
He cried. He's famously cried. And I'm like not making fun of him, but he was so emotional and he wanted to get back to Juve after he was loaned out to, I want to say, Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
And then he really, really wanted to be back. And then he goes and does that. To me, it's more like, hey, you're fine to do whatever you want, but you ruined the goodwill with your Juve fans. So is it worth going to Inter for 1 year or whatever it is? Anyways, Cuadrado, we don't wish you luck, but thank you for everything. Obviously, we have some amazing moments. I've seen the man live get sent off after stepping on Ramos. So that's one of those things. That was one of those things that, that wasn't smart. There's many things Cuadrado has done. There's also many things that he did to.
He gave me one of my best Juve memories ever. I went to the 2016 Coppa Italia final in Rome against Milan. And I was there when he put in that like thunderous cross from midfield, and Morata kind of slid that one in to win in extra time. That 1-0, like I almost like fainted in just like delirium when that goal was scored. It was just that was amazing to be a part of. So Juan, definitely thank you for that, memory. But yeah, man, when you're a U of A player and you're going to be a player who has history with the club.
Yeah. And they hate them at Inter, there's just too, right?
One, there's
sorry,
one club you don't go to.
Yeah, they really one do. Club.
One. There's a million other one ones.
It's hilarious to me that he chose Inter because he's been a pain in their ass for years.
Yeah. Oh, he's been.
Genuinely, I read the comments. It's like Juve fans, it's like that meme when the two hands are, you know, who is it? Arnold and someone else. They're shaking hands.
Carl Weathers,
exactly. Juve fans and Inter fans don't like him. So it's a weird move all around, but wish him luck. On a personal level, he's always been like a terrific human being. Always smiling, family man, can't hold that against him. But I really hope he never wins anything in his life as long as he's donning the black and blue. Should we move on to our top four predictions and then kind of move on to something else? What do you guys think? We had you guys prepare the top four finishes. We'll see how deluded we are. We'll see how because I have Juve in all top four spots, so don't hold that against me.
Are we? Who do wants you want to do first? Like all of our fours, then all of our threes, or just each person roll through it?
No. Let's just do one, two, three, four, and you know what else we'll do? No, don't have time for that. But anyways, who wants to go first? And you're obviously a little bit of a description why you chose that top four. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Go ahead, Zaki. Your top four predictions, Serie A season 2023-2024.
Yeah. All right. So I got Juve finishing one. And the reason why is because the fact that we have more depth than we have had. We've blooded some of our youngsters that we know are capable of being able to perform at this level. And the fact that we have no Europe, we have a way less congested schedule than everybody else, and I think that's going to work in our favor. I really do. And, you know, say what you will about Allegri's tactics, or Allegri knows how to win generally. You know, his track record shows that, even if it's not pretty, and it might make me very annoyed at times, but, like, he'll do it. So I have them being kind of favorites to win this league. I have Milan at two. I really like a lot of the signings that they made. I think bringing in Yunus Musa is an excellent get for them at the price they got him at. The dude is a workhorse. He's a tremendous defensive midfielder to fill in for the loss of Tonali. And they got him at like 20 million or something like that. Like a really good price. I think Pulisic, if they can keep him healthy, he is going to be dynamite for them. Especially going forward in a team that likes to get forward and attack. So I really liked their picks. You got Maignan. You still got Mike Maignan, who's arguably probably the best goalkeeper in the league. I think they're just really strong, and they're familiar with Pioli's system. They know how he works. I think the veteran guys will help bring in the new guys and help them assimilate into that team. I think they'll be really strong. Three I have is Lazio. Ooh. And the reason why
said you hate them.
I do hate them, and I hate saying this, but I think
that just shows your professionalism, that you're not biased.
No, you know, I hate it. I hope they get relegated, but Sarri is a good manager. I think he really is a good manager. I think he's got some real talent on that team. And I don't think the burden, even though they're going to be playing in Europe this year, I don't think the burden, I think they might crash out early, kind of, and then sort of put all their eggs in the Serie A basket, because I think they do want to win a title. And I think that's going to go, you know, do well for them. Now, here's the thing. I think they're busters. I think they drop the ball every time, so I don't think they'll actually win, but, you know. I think that they're a really strong squad, and I think they've got players that really work with Sarri's system. Now, the last one I got is kind of a total toss-up, but I like Atalanta at four.
Ooh.
I trust in Gasperini. They've refreshed the squad a little bit. I think Scamacca is going to have a big year. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, is that where he went?
Yeah, he went to Atalanta. And
I like that kid.
And, you know, he's got a lot of veteran players who, again, know how to play. I think that you saw them fall off because I think some players just weren't at their peak anymore. You know, your Zapatas and the Muriels, and they're probably going to get moved on, I would say, probably in January, if anything. But I think that they've invested well in some of their signings, and I think they're going to be really strong in the long run. They may have games that they drop that they probably shouldn't, but I think over the course of the season, they're going to get that fourth spot.
Very interesting. Awesome. So that goes with Juve, Milan.
Can you give us next, like, boys, your 30-second take on why you think Inter and Napoli are not worthy of top four?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both the load and the stress of being in Europe is going to really push them. Napoli, I don't know how Rudy Garcia is going to play with this team. I really, honestly, to be quite honest, I'm not totally sold on Rudy Garcia. Yeah, he had that team with Lyon that went pretty far in the Champions League, but he's got to adapt to a new league.
When was that?
2019.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. And I don't know how he's going to adapt. I think them losing Kim Min-jae was actually a massive blow, like a tremendous blow for them. I don't care who they bring in to replace him. I think that guy was such a wall for them. I think they're going to struggle after the season that they had last year, trying to go and repeat Serie A, but then on top of that, be competing in Champions League is going to be perhaps a little bit too much for them. Inter, I think that losing some of their players that have been more established, like Brozovic, even if he's past his time, he was immensely important for them. Losing Onana, who definitely kept them in games. Kept them in games that they had no business being in.
I'm shocked they let him go.
Yeah, well, I mean, but what was it, like 60?
Got like 45 million capital gain on him.
And then did you guys?
Yeah, it was a lot. Man.
It's a great keeper. I followed him ever since Ajax. Yeah. I love Onana, but
yeah, I don't.
He played for my two least favorite teams now, Inter and Manchester United.
Right? Yeah, no, it's like great, you know, great player, but I can't. It's like hard to root for him because he's playing for dog shit, right? Yeah. But I'm not convinced of the players that they have to fill in the gaps. I think Fratesi is okay. I don't love Fratesi. I think it'll give him some time. It'll take some time for him to really bed into Inter system and to figure out what they really want from him. I don't think he's going to be able to do what Brozovic was doing necessarily for them right off the bat. Their goalkeeper situation is interesting. They have some good goalkeepers. I mean, Aldero is a good goalkeeper, but like, is he like Onana good? I don't know.
Onana.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. All right. And one more thing. They're looking to sign Ben Pavard. And I'm like, by all means, go.
I think
it's
pretty much done, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, go sign him. That dude's a walking red card. Yeah. Like, every time I watch that man is reckless. And he has been coasting on the back of one unbelievable goal in 2018.
I was just going to bring that up.
That's it. Like, I've never seen anything else from him that's like really remarkable. I really don't think he's great.
That's hilarious.
And if that's where they're spending their money, I just don't think they're going to compete for a top four spot.
That's so funny. Yeah. I mean, that goal is unbelievable.
It is. It's an unbelievable
literally
goal.
Literally haven't seen him do anything besides that.
I've seen that dude get tossed out of games.
It's an exaggeration, but hey, hopefully he will get the nice red cards against Juve. Mm-hmm. Fantastic breakdown. Thank you, my friend.
Of course.
Top four from...
So I'll go bottom up. I have Atalanta too. In
that's what she said.
That 0-0 draw that we had against them, I thought that was a fun game to watch, actually. I think they've got a lot of good pieces.
By the way, a friendly that ends with 0-0 is kind of bullshit, right? we can all agree.
Yeah, I mean, you expect, especially when the starting 11 comes off, that it's going to get scrappy and some goals will go in, but that didn't happen. But I think they don't miss a beat getting rid of Hoyland. I think they just what a masterclass from them. I think he's just going to stink it up at United. Yeah, I think Atalanta's got good team. They've brought in some good players. I really like Lookman. He was phenomenal against us last season with Lookman, Scamacca, Coop Myers, if I'm saying his name correctly. That front three, I think, is something to reckon with. Third place, I have Napoli. I agree, Zachy. I think there's no way they can repeat. There's just no way. They're not going to play the same way. They're an injury away from Kvara and Osimhen from just not having that same output that they had last year. And Rudy Garcia is not a winner. He's just not a winner. I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say Spalletti was their guy. I feel like that was a perfect combination.
It really was. So I have them at three. Two. I wanted to put Juve at two, but I have
Inter, isn't it?
At two. I like a lot of the players that they signed. I think they spent wisely. The question for them will be, can they make it work? And can Giroud stay healthy? I think if Giroud stays healthy and they can figure out a way to piece that midfield together and how Leao, Pulisic, again, if he stays healthy, and the new guy, I can't pronounce his name. How do you say it? Chukwueze? How do you say it, guys? Chukwueze. Okay. Chukwueze, I think if Chukwueze. They can figure out a way to make that combo work, it'll be really devastating.
Yeah, my one of them on Juve so
their, bad. Their preseason was a disaster, right? Like they couldn't make that team work. I have to believe that Pioli will make it work, and that's why I have them at two. And at one, it's us. I didn't want to put us there. I didn't, right? Because I just think it's too kind of fanboyish, just being totally biased. But I think Milan,
I'm with you, Kevin.
I think there's too many new pieces to have that sorted out, but I think there's enough talent there that they're going to push to the end. Again, Napoli, I think the Rudy Garcia effect and just the pressure of a repeat is too much. And Inter lost the spine of their team. They lost Onana, they lost Brozovic, and Dzeko was and Lukaku, depending on who was there, and Skriniar.
And they lost Skriniar.
Yes, overlooked that. They lost the spine.
Yeah. Everybody forgot him.
They lost the spine.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask a silly question? Can I ask a very silly question? Again, I'm just going to go into the season of the podcast being honest that I'm way behind. I'll try to do my best, but who does Lukaku belong to now? I literally don't know which team.
Chelsea.
See, I didn't... That's ridiculous. All right. So you said that.
Yeah. So I don't have them in the top five. So I have Juve, right? And I think it's hopefully the continuity of not having too many changes, having a healthy Chiesa, maybe even Pogba. I mean, I don't want to count him in the starting 11 because I think it's completely unreliable, but it looks like he might actually be coming back faster than we thought. Actual wingers in Wea and Cambiasso has looked amazing. I'd start him over Kostic personally. And some of these younger guys, right? If Dean Huijsen can come in and he's a reliable backup in the back three, Hans Nicolussi and Yildiz, if they stay, like those are some really exciting players that we can have in the midfield. Yeah. And Rabiot, Locatelli, Fagioli, that midfield three was impeccable last year. And it only started humming like in the last third of the season, more or less. And being able to start the season with that momentum without Europe, I think there's a lot of things going in our direction. So I'm putting it out there. Us number one.
Okay. Hey. Hey, man, this, you know, biased or not, it's still better than mine because I have Juve finishing all top fours. Lucas, Let's move on to you.
Yo, quick aside really quick, Lucas, before I let you get started. I was so impressed by Nicolussi in the preseason. I think that kid is unbelievable. I think he has so much potential. Yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, so I'll go with number four, which is a team I've been following like a decent amount this transfer market, which is Roma. I think that they have made some sign-ins that really speak to Mourinho and what he's trying to accomplish. And I think their biggest flaw last season was in their midfield and not having enough bite there. And, you know, you go bring in Renato Sanchez, Paredes, Awar. You bring in three guys that have distribution ability, have the ability to score, can dribble really well. There are some egos there, of course, but Mourinho's the type of guy that really grabs hold of egos. And I think Roma are going to be, I think they're going to be an enjoyable team.
Where are their goals coming from, though?
Definitely a team that's going to be formidable.
Where are their goals coming from?
I hear you there, but I think the midfield is going to be so strong, they're going to give a lot of just tap-ins for their midfields. Dybala is going to be Dybala if he could stay healthy. And they have Tammy Abraham, which I rate really high. He doesn't need to be anything spectacular.
But he's out for like five or six months, though. So they're going to have Belotti up there who couldn't do anything for them last year.
That's very true. I think they're going to do – if Dybala stays healthy, I think we'll determine if they make that fourth place spot. If he gets hurt, then it's over, I think, because he's got goals in him too. I have him at four. They're going to leap. They're going to crawl to that fourth place spot. But for third, I have Inter. I think that the players that
going back to Roma, I feel like Paredes and Mourinho is going to be freaking popcorn time. It's going to be hilarious. They will either embrace each other and make the greatest partnership, or 2 months in, Paredes is just going to throw a fit. Anyways, sorry. Go ahead, buddy. Number three.
I think Inter. I think bringing in Jan Sommer is – I didn't rate Onana that high. I really didn't, so I'm happy. I'm not happy, but whatever. Like, they got in somebody – yeah, I misspoke. But they brought in a good goalkeeper. If we're trying to, like, actually talk for Inter and think they're going to do well, I think Jan Sommer is a good player. DeMarco, they still have – their midfield players, Tona Lagalu, could slot into that six like he was doing last season. I think Carlos Augusto is somebody I really wanted at Juve, and it's unfortunate we didn't bring him in. They have the likes of Barella still. Like, they have a lot of their pieces. And Inzaghi, I think, is one of the best coaches in the world as well. Mm-hmm. And they have Marcus Thuram. They have a guy that we were looking at as well. They seem to be really going for our backup options, which I always find very funny. Obviously, Cuadrado and some players, but I think they have enough there to keep top four. They have the experienced coach. They have experienced players in Serie A. I think that they could be third. Unfortunately, I want them to be lower, but I just think that they are a good team and a respectable team, and hopefully, we could beat them those two times. But second, I have Milan, along with you guys. I think they did a really good job of, you know, buying players that are going to fit what Pioli wants. I think Pioli's really kind of shaken off a lot of criticisms he's had over the last few years. And I think he's grown a lot as a coach. And that's really all I have in mind. I'm not going to repeat some of the stuff you guys have said. And when it comes to first place, I have Juve. I don't like saying it. It's the first time I've said it since Allegri's last season. We went on that run that I think we actually have a shot at winning it. This season, if we could stay injury-free, which you have to assume we do, which we've been the most injury-prone team in Serie A the last like four seasons. So
I mean, there's no telling anymore.
The odds of us being injured again that much, again, going into another season, it's possible, but we could just cross our fingers this time. We stay healthy without the extra competitions. We loaned
out... a little side quest again. Who can remind the listeners and myself, what were the biggest injuries of last year? Because I mean, Pogba comes to mind, which we saw maybe a couple of games, aside from social media posts, because I feel like he's just an ambassador by now. Who else comes to mind? Chiesa came back after a long spell, right?
Came after the World Cup. He really kind of came back after, but even then, he wasn't really there. You had you had Bonucci's injury, which, you know, you could say, yeah, he was dying out anyway, but that didn't help. But he was also injured and really kind of...
Talking about Bonucci, by the way, too.
And that really kind of kicked him out of the squad, really. Vlahovic having that injury region, but still during a World Cup goes and grabs the lower region and aggravates it even more, which I find hilarious. But there was an injury there. But I mean,
wait, he got injured because he grabbed his nuts. What?
No, but I mean, if he's having groin issues and he goes and scores in the World Cup and he goes and grabs that area. I mean, what are you doing, buddy? We didn't have a lot in the terms of quantity of injuries, but in the terms of who it hurt. We put so much emphasis on Pogba last season and Di Maria, and then they both go out. It's just the players we put so much emphasis on.
There was a point where Perin was starting and he's doing really well as well. Was that because Chesney was injured?
Yes. Tech was injured at the beginning of the season, I thought.
Man. Yeah, I feel like that beginning of the season really screwed us with the injuries. We never really got a fair start.
We have not had a consistent start in 11 since Allegri's last season. So if we could have a consistent start in 11, we don't get injured. We don't have multiple competitions in the continuity, like Kevin said. Like, we kept Rabio, we kept certain players. We loaned out our young guys. Like, we are in a win now mode. With Allegri as well.
All right, so Lucas has Juve number one, Milan number two, Inter three, Roma four. Good stuff, boys. Again, it will be funny to post Juve as number one, and it feels wrong not to do it. So what do I do here?
I don't feel comfortable. Like, I still feel like strange, second or third place is like.
Yeah, I feel icky.
I think the closer we get to the season, I think more people will think it's Juve because there is so much change happening to these teams like Inter, Milan, Roma, Lazio, Atalanta. Like, Napoli getting Rudy Garcia is just the complete opposite type of mindset that you
that's
want.
A terrible that I literally just learned about it, and that's a pretty terrible appointment.
We saw what happened with Roma, with those two essentially ruining Roma for a short period of time. Like, the transition between both coaches just does not seem to
work. That's a shocking decision. Wasn't he in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah,
for
and
a
then
while?
Ronaldo showed up and they fired him.
Yeah. He...
Oh, that's right. Oh my God. He sent his ass back to Italy, didn't he?
It's not just that he's a bad coach. It's just, what is that? How do you signal that to your players? Like, you're losing Spalletti, and you would think that they want to bring in a top coach to then propel you forward, but you bring in somebody that basically tells your team you're not going to win Serie A and you're not going to win Champions League, and you have players that keep saying they want to leave, like Osimhen. So it's like, what does that signal to a player like Osimhen? I'm just very disappointed with what Napoli have been doing on the managerial side, but that's just how they want to do things. And what I mean by disappointed, I mean more of like Italy representation and Champions League and all that. So I don't think they're going to do too well.
Yeah, I feel like with that coach, I don't see Napoli in the top four at all. So my top four would be, I jotted it down, listen to you guys. I mean, I feel like Juve, the advantage of not having Europe and hopefully Allegri just fixing his shit. I mean, do you guys remember all the negativity that came with Allegri last year? I don't think we should mention that one more time, because we've never seen anything like it as far as the coach of Juve getting so much hate, right? So I feel like if Allegri makes a few changes, I saw them playing a little better out the back. Last year was just awful. Every time they started an attack, it was nerve-wracking. Every time Chesney tried to pass it on to the closest guy, he would get covered. And then in 2-3 passes, we would lose the ball. It was my biggest problem of last year. But I saw some improvement. Hopefully a little more comfortable on the ball. I can kind of see Inter finishing second. It would be fun to have the two dog race between us and Inter. Milan coming in third, and I guess Atalanta sounds like a good fourth place finisher. And it's a toss up between Napoli and Atalanta in fourth. I do feel like it will be a dumpster fire in Napoli. I feel like this Scudetto is gonna keep them alive for a long, long time, and the hunger to win will not be there for a long time. So mm-hmm. I don't see them going in the top three. So it's the usual suspects: Juve, Inter Milan, top three. So we got that going. Let's mention a couple of things here. So Bonucci situation. Mm. I don't think anyone is being unfair to Bonucci. What do you guys think?
I don't think so.
I mean, he had his time, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he was, say what you will about him, he was a major part of one of our most dominating, prolific eras, especially in the modern game. I mean, geez, like, the dude, he had, there were some times, and like when he was next to Chiello and he had a certain mentality where the dude was brilliant. He was brilliant, but he's older. He has not aged as well as Chiellini has. I think he's had more niggling injuries. It's time. I think he should know it's time, and he should
Every time he was on the field last year, it was just a comedy of errors.
I worried. Never thought I would worry with him on the pitch, but I worried.
So looks like he's gone. Sounds like Zach's favorite team, Lazio, is after him. And to finish off the episode, I feel like we should mention Buffon again. 45 years old. Passion is there, but I feel like the ability is not. And meeting Buffon was one of my favorite ever, even though it was a couple of minutes. But yeah, we went to the private meet. I always mentioned the private training session in San Francisco in 2013. He was the first one out of the dressing room to meet the fans. Signed every shirt he found. Took pictures with everyone. He was just he's Gigi. We're not going to spend much time on him because everyone knows he's Gigi. Check out our Instagram page for all the tributes that we did to him. And you guys have any Gigi thoughts?
Greatest ever.
I always say there's people who think Gianluigi Buffon is the greatest keeper of all time, and there's people who are
wrong. Well said.
Two groups. This Russian dude was arguing with me and trying to put Yashin in there, and I understand Yashin is one of the greats, one of the pioneers, but still comparing a keeper from the 1960s. He did win the Euro with USSR. He was an innovator, Black Spider, but comparing him to Buffon is just so silly. Anyways, any other thoughts, boys? I feel like the transition from the summertime to again podcasting was pretty smooth. I appreciate you guys. This was a lot of fun. Any last thoughts, guys? Come on, don't fall asleep on me.
Yeah. Any last thoughts? I mean, shoot. Forza Juve, always. I'm so excited for the season. I really am.
Me too.
This is like the first season in the last couple where I feel really rejuvenated and looking forward to my team. Like, not to say I'm not excited to see every year, but like, you know, I have less reservation and way more excitement for this year more than ever. So in the past few.
I agree. I'm
very excited.
Next game against Udinese is in a couple of days. We wanted to sort of fit in this podcast before we get into the actual meat of things. And we will have more regular podcasts. We hear you. One of the complaints was it wasn't consistent, and that's my fault. There will be longer episodes, more guests. The guests will be rotating as always. I'm just really, really, really looking forward to this to this new season of the Touring Giants podcast. You guys have been so kind. I you know, like I said, last season was a little choppy for me personally. We try to do the best we can, and everyone was super, super kind. So I really appreciate you guys. Boys, Kevin, our guy from Turin, if you go to Turin Giants Instagram page, if you see any photos from the stadium and videos and lives, he's our guy.
Familiarize.
get familiar with Kevin, because you guys will be seeing him a lot. Lucas is our formation / tactician. He's actually coach in real life. Zachy, you're my boy, man. We will be doing a YouTube series with Zach. We're planning on taking famous episodes in the Juve history and kind of bring you guys the story behind it. Besides the YouTube format, we will also be breaking them down into YouTube shorts and I don't know about TikTok. Didn't really take off, but we do have a TikTok page if you want to join Turin Giants. Anyways, we'll be bringing you guys way more content than just a podcast. So we're expanding. Turin Giants YouTube page is in its second year. I'm so proud of the work the guys are doing over there, Dave and Dash, and everyone who joins in for the call-in shows. This is something that we're doing differently, is the audience can participate and be part of the show as well. So watch out for those announcements. Quite frankly, I'm exhausted already. So we you can hear my voice, right? Boys, thank you so much. TuringGiants.com. Please support the podcast. That's the best way to do it. You get some awesome merchandise while helping us out financially. So we appreciate you guys. If you live in the Chicago area, please get in touch with me at Juve Chicago. The official fan club is still going strong. Our second year, there will be a lot of meetings, way more than last year. So if you live in the Chicagoland area, I got messages from Detroit people because they don't have an official club there. Please join us. Come here, buddy. We got this number 10. Wants to say hello. He did join a soccer team this year. He has 3 games tomorrow. My boy Amir.
All right.
Yeah. He did go through a lot of the smaller teams, and you know, this is now by invitation only.
Good luck, buddy.
On the team, really proud of him.
Yeah, good luck.
They're saying good luck to you. Now he's silent. Boys. Love you guys, as always. Thank you so much. And stay hydrated. Check on your friends. And Forza Juve. Say Forza Juve. Thanks, boys. Thanks to everyone.
Forza Juve. Fa esplodere lo Juventus Stadium.